Yeah, Frank here, he's got his own billiard room.
Yes, it's the...
billiard room.
Come on already. We call it the...
The place to be.
Yes, the place to be. The place to be.
Then I shall be there.
Now, it's time. Live and in living color.
The Grandy Man can.
Ugh. Time to play the game!
No, you left me satisfied and smiling. So.
That's what she said!
Why do I want this? I want to make bank, bro. I want to get ass. I want to drive a Range Rover.
Place to be Nation, Scott Criscola and Justin Rosero. This is the Place to Be podcast.
Very nice, Mr. Criscola.
Oh, I'm sorry, Dennis.
Japanese band Oral Vampire produced a song called The Repo Man and used footage.
Oral Vampire, huh?
Or Oral. A-U-R-A-L.
What kind of show is this?
Sounds like some Twilight porn in Michael Vincent's collection there.
Oz went on to star in American Pie, of course, as the lacrosse player. Bismarck. No, was it Bismarck? Was that his
Lizmark.
Name? Lizmark. No, who's the other guy I'm getting confused with?
Bismarck. Yeah, he dressed as North Dakota.
There's only one place where the big boys play, and that is in my extra queen size bed. Well, it just happens. What can you do?
Let's talk the fix.
I think they might hit a shock wall.
Is that the Shockmaster's wall?
Yeah, I like Big Dick myself. I was just curious. PTB Nation, let me know what
you're
our
favorite. Opener.
To do worse than Josh Richard. What do
you think? Place to Be Nation, welcome back to another great episode of the one and only Place to Be podcast. I am your co-host, Justin Rosero, coming at you live here on this Wednesday evening inside the PTB Man Cave, and it's a huge night on a few levels. One... It's because we are at episode 298, meaning we are 1 week away from episode 300. That's right. Next week we have episode 299 will be our fourth annual March Madness preview show. And then episode 300 extravaganza will come at you next Wednesday evening inside the Man Cave. So stay tuned for that. Another reason it's a very big episode is because our guest tonight, you've heard him a lot on our website, PlaySimulation.com, lately, but not on this show. He hasn't been here since December, but he is back to look at the second half of 2001 in the World Wrestling Federation. That is Kevin Kelly, the voice of Ring of Honor. We'll talk a little bit about what's going on in ROH right now, coming off their big weekend in Milwaukee and Chicago. And we'll also talk about what's going on his exclusive podcast here at PlaySimulation.com. That is the Kevin Kelly Show. Now, you may be wondering why I sound to be flying solo, because by this point, usually in these shows, I brought in my PIC. He's running a little bit late. He's got his churchly duties going on, his Knights of Columbus meeting, so he'll be running a few minutes behind. But before we bring Kevin in, we just wanted to talk quickly about what is going on at PlaySimulation.com, and whom better to do that with than the managing editor of that website, and of course my longtime close personal friend, Mr. Brad Woodling. Brad, how you doing?
Good evening, Justin. I'm doing real well, thanks.
I suck at the titles. I can never remember them. I butcher them no matter who I talk to when I do it.
I'm sticking just to the managing editor thing. When I was on with Will, as members had listened to, he struggled a little bit on how to introduce me. Everybody else had a show, and he tried to pull up the memories of the Brad and Chad show. And we just go with the managing editor.
Okay, we'll take it. Why don't we quickly just tell the listeners here what they can find at PlaySimulation.com, how you can find all the things on the site, and then we're going to bring Kevin in and we'll dive right into 2001.
Sure. Well, absolutely. Well, when you go to PlaceToBeNation.com, you can find our great family of podcasts. Right on the right, we got a big picture of the PTB podcast logo. You can go in through there and you'll find all the logos for all our great shows. Right above that's the Kevin Kelly Show. And of course, we're real excited to have Kevin on tonight, again, to talk about the second half of 2001. Some of the big things we got cooking right now are our second comics roundtable. The boys recorded a couple days ago. That's their entire staff. So we have Greg and Nick, Russell Sellers, Todd Weber, and also Tim Capel. And the five of them do a fantastic job. They are absolutely experts in their field. So we're real excited. On a monthly basis, we're going to be doing a comics roundtable. And these guys, again, really worth your time to listen. If you like comics, it's an awesome show.
Cool thing with them too is they're all friends, so they're all, it's a very easy listen, you know. It's not, there's no awkward pauses or weirdness, you know. They're all guys that get along well, know their stuff, and it's a really easy listen if you're a comics fan. Even if you're not like me, it's still really fun to listen to.
You bet. And then also Place to Be Nation's Extra Point. Why don't you talk a little bit about what the Extra Point is?
Sure. Like, my PIC Scott Criscola, as we've told the story many times on the show,
used to have internet radio shows. He did one for wrestling that he called The Main Event, which obviously has been resurrected this year as part of PlaceToBeNation.com. And also did The Extra Point with our good friend Dr. G, George Ribolino, where they kind of looked at the world of sports. And a very, very sports talk radio format. They have different segments with different analysts. So, you know, in episode one that's coming up this week, we had... or that's up right now, we had Andrew Reich and Todd Gessling talked college basketball, and then myself and Roger Morissette went through baseball. We looked at NFL free agency. Scott's already lining up some cool guests as well. So we'll have a lot of different analysts on. We'll target different sports as we move through the year. As of right now, the plans for that to go bi-weekly here on the site. We'll see if we need to ramp it up, especially come football. So for you football fans and sports fans that kind of miss our headline shows where we did a lot of sports talk because we've kind of pushed those to the side with all the stuff going on with our wrestling in the wrestling world, this will kind of be your fix now for sports talk. And Scott and Dr. G know their stuff. And, Scott's obviously a great host. So this should be a really fun show that I'm looking forward to being a part of going forward as well.
I prefer to use branched off instead of pushed off. So we've branched off the sports instead of because you guys haven't had a lot of time to talk about it. But
I miss it. I mean, I really miss doing our weekly NFL predictions this year. So it'll be good to kind of get back to that in that format. So, something to look forward to. And then the podcast family grows. Brad,
yeah,
you know, we got the Kevin Kelly show.
For it.
Extra point and the main event, like I mentioned.
Yeah, the extra point's going to be great. I mean, everybody reads these guys on a weekly basis. Andrew Reich, Todd Gessling, just putting out consistently great material. The Cowboy with the boxing MMA, and of course yourself with we have a lot coming up with baseball too. Mm-hmm. So I know you've teased it a little bit, but we're shaping up a pretty good staff if we can use some pitching baseball lingo there for this year. So we're really looking forward to that too. And of course, it is WrestleMania season. We've already done our WrestleMania Rewind shows on WrestleMania 4, which Parv hosted. It was kind of a different take as they focused on the lead up to WrestleMania 4 rather than the actual show and the individual matches. And that's what makes the Rewind series so unique. And of course, you hosted WrestleMania 7 with our friends Jeremy, Will, and Steven there. And we have a bunch of other ones coming up real soon. You're going to hear 18, which I'm going to be hosting, and 14. And then also 23, and then I'll be back again for 28. So I'm going to hold off on the names on that because you never know, things change, and also we have some surprises in there. So,
and like you said, the cool thing is it's not just a show review because you get that here on our show, you get that on Where the Big Boys Play. You know that's on our other show. So this is more like you said with 4 was really cool because they went through all the old observers and all the build to the tournament. And for 7, we looked at kind of individual storylines and concepts. We didn't just go match by match. So it's a different take, a unique take, and some good voices. So to get you amped for Mania season, we got those handful of more coming at you.
Absolutely. And we have some great other Mania material, too. One thing that I wanted to highlight, because we pulled the staff, and I'll give full credit to our friends Greg Phillips and Nick Duke, pulled the staff. We had 10 members rank their top 25 and worst 15 Mania matches. So we have the results. We're going to put together a written piece, and we may even sneak a little bit of an audio companion to that. So really cool stuff there, because that is the pulse of Place to Be Nation. As always, you know, we appreciate you supporting the shows and the site. If you ever want to head over to Amazon, you just head to Place to Be Nation first. Click on that Amazon link, which is on the right side of the page, and we get a little bit of a kickback, and it helps us pay the bills, and we really do appreciate it.
And there's no extra steps for you besides just going to the website first. Like, you don't have to pay anything extra.
No.
You don't have to keep clicking back through. Once you hit that button and you go to Amazon, you're good to go. So
you're good
to go. You can buy whatever you're going to buy. You can do whatever you're going to do. Your basket's all there. Everything. You're already logged in. So if you just click there first, two extra seconds of your day really helps us out quite a bit. So if you enjoy the podcast, if you enjoy the site, or you just want to see Scott dance naked on a table, you can go ahead and throw some bones through Amazon.com. We appreciate it. You can visit us, of course, facebook.com/placetobenation, and on Twitter, place2benation as well. If you're interested in writing for the site, info@placetobenation.com. Always looking for new writers in sports and wrestling, pop culture, movies, music. So hit us up. A lot of cool things in the pipeline, a lot of hard work, and a lot of great work. So, Brad, I want to thank you for stopping by here tonight.
You bet.
We're going to do now is we're going to take a very quick break, and when we return, K squared returns to V squared. No, not V squared. Well, it's kind of like the cousin of V squared, right? Cousin of the Vintage Vault.
Sure.
Grandfather, either way.
It's the wrap-up of the Vintage Vault.
It is the wrap-up. So we're going to go ahead and wrap up the year 2001 with Kevin Kelly right after this break. You and Chad never do the because.
I have been trained to only speak when it's
all right,
been
bye.
Spoken.
All right, Nation, we are back from break, and it's still your solo PIC here. Brad has left, and we do have our special guest on with us. And, of course, you can hear him every other week at PleaseToBeNation.com and at PleaseToBe.podbean.com as well and on iTunes. He is the, I guess, co-host, we'll call him. You know, kind of sits in the chair of the Sports Flash guy, kind of helps me out on the show, and that is, of course, the great Kevin Kelly. Kevin, how are you doing?
You are absolutely delusional. You know, you get 5 seconds of airtime on the Kevin Kelly show, and now you think you're the co-host.
Well, now you're on my show, so I will take the lead here.
All right.
Your show has 4 episodes. Mine has 298.
I know. And I wouldn't be, put it this way, the Kevin Kelly show on the Place to Be Nation would have never happened without you.
Oh, see, I'm not looking for that kind of compliment.
Well, no, but it's true. It's true. I would have never met you were it not for this.
That's true.
And for these retrospective looks back in, you know, WWF years past. Mm-hmm. And so now we're working together on the Kevin Kelly show, and it's a lot of fun. I am getting, you know, and again, you do these things and it's sort of like in a vacuum because you don't really know how many people are listening. You know, it's not like a live crowd where you can count heads.
Right.
But I'm getting a lot more feedback from people. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, hey, I've started listening to your podcast now. I'm going back and I'm catching up and listening to the old episodes. I really like that interview with Hanson. I really like that interview with Bennett, you know.
So you've had people actually come up to you in the arena too?
Yeah, people at people in Chicago, people in Milwaukee both said something about it and just kind of caught me off guard. So that was nice, you know, because it's almost like, oh, thank you. Yeah, good. I'm glad you enjoy it.
Yeah, you can. The whole archive is on PlaceToBeNation.com. If you just go to the main site and you click the big picture of Kevin there on the right, it takes you right to his designated page, and it's got everything, all the episodes and his one written piece. And we have the full interview with Mike Bennett from last week. That went almost an hour, and it was excellent. You guys really dove into some good topics. You talked all about BJ Whitmer's injury. He talked all about his tryout with WWE, and you kind of got in off the off-ramp of the system they have in place right now as far as developing talent and bringing guys in. And I thought that was a real interesting look from a guy who went through the process and you, who's, you know, kind of been there.
So. And somebody that I know very well, you know, and I've known Mike since he's 18, you know, and he's 28 now. And then I was on the Mike and Maria in Wonderland show, which is at Mike and Maria in Wonderland.com, I think is the correct web address. And I was on that last night because Maria had a death in the family. Unfortunately, her uncle passed away. So I wasn't subbing for Marie in any way, but just, I think Mike wanted somebody to talk to. So he brought me on as a guest and we almost did an hour talking completely about other stuff. We didn't cover anything that we had covered in the interview that we did on our show.
Nice. So it's a nice little companion piece.
Yeah, so it was great. So seek both out because I think you'll learn more about Mike, and we talked a lot about philosophy of wrestling.
Yep.
And just had a real good conversation. We talked a lot about Mike's roots in wrestling. We got in-depth about Steve Bradley and Brutal Bob, and also what's right and what's wrong with wrestling nowadays. So it was kind of it was a real good conversation.
And now just for any listeners, because you know we do very well when you're on here for these retrospectives. So any listeners who haven't tuned in yet, because we haven't had you back on our show, Kevin, since we started the podcast, you've had 4 episodes and you've had 4 really good guests. So the episode 1, we talked to Adam Cole. Episode 2 was AJ Styles, which was a really good interview. He had just re-signed with the Ring of Honor and was about to make his return, have his return performance. So that was a really good chat. And episode 3 was Hanson, which was my favorite interview because this is a guy many people may not know about. And just had an awesome, awesome story about his career.
Yeah, that was tremendous. And knowing that where Hanson is going to go in Ring of Honor, I really wanted the fans to be able to get to know a little bit about this guy because we knew the story behind the scenes. You know, when we signed him, it was like, you know, we knew where he came from and how far down he had fallen, how his career was almost over. And when you think about a guy that big, that burly with that ginormous beard, when he talks about how he gets back on track with, you know, juicing vegetables and fruits and yoga, mm-hmm. that's how he rehabilitated his career.
Yep.
It was really cool. And I think the guest, I try to bring people on. I'm never going to bring people on that I don't know.
Right.
Because I really just want to have conversation with friends. Like in a couple of weeks, Scrap Iron Adam Pierce is going to be on.
Nice. Well, that's breaking news right here. Adam Pierce will be on episode next week, a week from last night.
Yeah, so we'll be talking to him. And he's got, of course, a great past with Ring of Honor. And there's some controversy as well. Mm-hmm. And we're going to get into all that dirt because now we can. So this will be a good place for him to sort of, and I don't mean air dirty laundry, but I mean just really give his side of it because we've never really heard it. And what happened with the TNA gut check? And, what did Jerry Briscoe just say about Pierce that, you know, made him cry? And what are his thoughts about Paul Bearer going in the Hall of Fame, you know? And what's his future? Because how much does he have left in the tank? And, you know, is he going to be the San Diego Padres PA announcer?
What?
Trust me, this is going to be a dynamite interview.
Jake Roberts once said that, and it did not go well.
Oh, Jake,
trust me.
Does anybody want to see my snake?
kind of fitting.
Yeah, that'll be a real good interview.
Yes, looking forward to it. That'll be next Wednesday, right here at PlaceMediation.com, episode 5 of the Kevin Kelly Show. Anything else you want to mention about the show before we move on?
No, but thank you to. What's that kid's name that helps out?
McSomething.
He McGann, sweeps up. And,
McLovin.
Yeah, I can't remember his name.
He does some
nice
shit.
Kid, goofy yeah, smile.
All right. He's all right.
Not all there, but he means well.
He gets nervous when I try and blow up his spot about his possible budding relationship he's in. He gets a little
geez.
A little nervous.
Don't do that to the poor kid. He'll pee his pants.
Yes, he will.
By the way, speaking of peeing my pants.
Yeah.
I almost peed my pants tonight.
You did?
Well, before we take this look back down memory lane in years gone by in the WWF, my wife and I secured purchase of a new car.
Yes, you did.
A 2011 Ford Explorer. It's not new, but it's new to me. It was a lease turn-in, so it's got real low mileage, but it's got heated seats.
Nice.
Brother.
Welcome to the club. It's nice, huh?
Oh, my gosh. It was, and I'm sitting there, and I'm like, I think I'm going to pee my pants. And my wife was like, I think I may have peed my pants.
Such a relaxing. Just,
buttery hamstrings. I was like, oh, this is heaven.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't want to get out. I was like, no, I got to do the interview.
Yeah, so
it's time to talk. It's like I'm disappointed now. Summer's coming.
Well, let's not get crazy.
Yeah, I know. Where was this all winter long?
A lot of pee talk lately over here. I think we closed the episode 4 of the Kevin Kelly Show with like 7 minutes of talking about people peeing themselves. But
well, listen, it's a bodily function. It happens.
It is.
My wife and I did almost laugh when we were sealing the deal and we were in with the finance lady and we're signing the paperwork. We could have sworn she ripped ass in there. Just a little silent, like she was trying to let a silent one out and it was a little squeaker. You know, it's one of those. And I sort of stopped what I was saying mid sentence, and
you sold her out, man.
You should have walked. It like
oh,
it was
you should have walked. You should have walked. It would have been hilarious.
No, my wife kicked me in very gently, you know, and I sort of gave her the office. I was like, and we were fine, but she was an old woman, very nice. Bob Ruth Ford, by the way. They're going to become the new sponsor of the Kevin Kelly Show.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, I'm hooking them up.
So you can say, I went down to Bob Ruth Ford, and they took care of good old KK.
They did, man. I'll tell you, I'd gone to another Ford dealership that I wish cancer on. I wish cancer on these people at this other place. I'm not even going to mention their name. And I was so pissed off, I went to Bob Ruth, and they calmed me down and sat me down and said, here's what we're going to do for you. And they did exactly what they said they were going to do.
Very cool.
Can't ask for much more than that.
Any relation to Glenn Ruth?
Maybe.
Hmm.
I'll have to ask.
All right.
My salesman did look like Georgie Animal Steel.
Well, you can't go wrong there. Maybe it was him.
Maybe it was.
You should have went down to, where's Haku work? What's his, isn't he a car salesman?
In Kissimmee, yeah.
Yeah.
At least he was. His son is kicking ass over in New Japan.
Mm-hmm.
Tama Tonga. He's wrestling. He's been there 4 years now.
Very cool.
Yeah.
A lot of Samoans making it big.
More wrestling Samoans per capita than any other nation on earth.
Yes.
It's like a population of 30,000 and they've had 22,000 people in the wrestling business.
All right, I think we're going to get into some Samoan talk here tonight. So why don't we travel back, Kevin?
to 2001.
I put the Wayback Machine onto 2001 right now.
Okay. We last left off right after King of the Ring. So we were just about to start the invasion. Yeah, King of the Ring, Booker T made his debut, and Steve Austin retained his title. Chris Benoit went to the DL. Triple H is on the DL, and things are getting shaken up a little bit. So we start on the very special Madison Square Garden Raw, where WCW first invaded. Mike Awesome won the title. Booker comes out and scissor kicks Vince when Angle and Austin ended up at WWF New York. They were tricked. What are your memories of that night, of that show, and the excitement still kind of building for the invasion?
I remember the, you know, a lot of the new people having that first time in the Garden glaze. Like, whoa, this is pretty cool. Madison Square Garden, because, I've mentioned it before, that the Garden is certainly home for the WWF and always has been and always will be. So everything was special. I remember Mike Awesome being, you know, really psyched up and very nervous. And, you know, everybody was really on their P's and Q's. Locker room started getting a little bit more full now. And I this is when I think everybody started to get a little cranky.
Right.
Because there was, you know, business was starting to turn down. Rock had left, Triple H hurt, Benoit gone, as you mentioned now. And business started to creak a little bit. And they were, well, what are we going to do? We're going to split the rosters. We're going to have WCW competing with WWF. How's it going to work? And, you know, this is like when you, you know, the Crimeans and the Hungarians all working together to overthrow Russia. I don't know. It just, and oh, wait, we're on the same team? Okay. So it's kind of weird.
All right. So the next big Raw that happened were, of course, the night the Alliance was born. Where WCW came out, ECW formed, did that awesome turn where they all turned around and looked at the WWF guys.
My favorite moment in my tenure in the company.
RVD and Tommy Dreamer came out of the crowd. Paul Heyman jumps out of the commentary booth, hops into the ring, and Scott Criscolo entered the Place to Be podcast.
He did?
Good evening.
He's here.
Well, he's look here. Who it is.
You should have played the Undertaker Judgment Day video when he arrived.
He's here.
He just sat up. There he is.
Good evening, K-Squared. How are you?
Hey, man. How are you?
I am well. JR, pleasure to hear your voice again.
Did you guys
welcome
win?
Place to be.
Did you win your basketball game?
In overtime.
Very nice.
Finished the year, regular season 10-0, back-to-back division champions.
So are you the coach or what?
Yeah. Yes, I am. I am the Pat Riley of this team. Yes.
Oh.
Actually, I'm more like the Bill Russell in 69. I coached, but then, you know, I go in for like 3 minutes.
All right, Scott, do you want a minute now to air grievances with Kevin about the things he says about you on a show, or do you want to save it for the end?
No.
I can't work like this. If there are grievances that need to be aired, then I think we get them out now, and then we settle it, and then we can move on and have a good show.
All right, Scott, go ahead. I'll give you 1 minute.
All right, well, I was listening to The Kevin Kelly Show, only on PlaceToBeNation.com. Fantastic show, Kev. But I was listening to show number 2 today.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Fantastic interview with AJ Styles, by the way.
Right.
And we did your little underrated, overrated show, little game. And the first person you thought was overrated was me.
Well,
what'd you overrate me for? What have I ever done to you?
You have to take everything in perspective.
Oh,
you
boy,
see.
Here we go. Here's the big shoveling.
This is the idea of if everybody thinks that you're great and I say that you're overrated, now they're going to start to listen to you more and be like, wait, Kevin's wrong. He's an idiot.
I see. It's the Kevin Nash vanilla midgets theory.
Exactly. It's reverse psychology.
I see.
I had the people playing, just eating right out of my hand the entire time.
And you thought the Olympics would be a failure. Do you still agree?
The Sochi Olympics?
Yeah.
Oh, what a huge bust it was.
Yeah. You know what's going to happen in 4 years? All that stuff's going to be. It's like what happened in Beijing. All the facilities will be spray painted over and weeds. And it's not even going to be. They got to do a better job, the IOC, of picking cities. And yeah, that's going to be in someplace in South Korea in 4 years. And no one's going to remember that either. So
it was sad. They showed some of the scenes of Sarajevo. And, you know, like the bobsled track, it was all just overgrown. It's just so sad.
It is sad.
And this was all just really just a uh, just a PR move. And as soon as the games were over, up, that's it. Now we're going to slide down and we're going to who's the country they invaded? Or
well, the Ukraine and
Granada. Ukraine. That was it. I said Hungary before.
Granada. No, it's Granada. 1982. That's Britain that did
that's
that.
That's where I live, baby. 1982.
And then
yeah, well, so it's all just crap.
Look at Atlanta. Atlanta was a shithole.
Still is.
Until 1996, and now it's not as bad.
Yeah, their Olympic stadium's as empty as their baseball stadium and their basketball
well, yeah,
stadium.
Well, that was a dumb idea anyway. In any event, whether you're snowing me over or not, we need to move on to plenty of questions, so I'll accept your apology.
All right.
All right. The question Thank we were you. On was talking about the Alliance, the birth of the Alliance, Kevin. So did they hotshot this whole thing? When should have ECW showed up, and when should they have combined them?
It was, all right. What could you have done with this? There probably was 1,000,000,000 different ways to do it. I think that the way they did it with ECW, though, I can find no fault. Because that's, to me, what the company was built upon, right? Was that shock value. Mm-hmm. And for whatever reason, I wasn't on the road that week. I think I was home. And I was watching from home. That's right. And oh, that's right, because I had just had surgery on my hernia. And so anyway, it was so I like popped out of my chair when they did the wheel around and was like, yes, this is awesome. And Heyman's promo, incredible, calling you fat pig. Oh man, just all the things he said. And then it was like, what? When did they put Stephanie with them?
That night, at the end of the night.
Yeah, yep. So the good feeling lasted like half an hour, and then I was back. Oh, my stomach hurts. I hate this.
Well,
fire me now.
I mean, do you think the idea to put them together worked at some point? Just it was too soon, or should they have kept them apart permanently? Or well, Stephanie, the only problem you had?
It was really the only problem that I had. I think that the ECW thing was done. It's so bad because now going back to March, right? They had just bought the company. They had just bought WCW. And everybody thought it was going to be this great thing and we're going to have two touring companies. And I think at some point they realized we may not have the star value to sell tickets. We may need something else. And we may need ECW, which was kind of a weird thing. So I think that's how that was all born. And I don't know if any of that would have happened if Lawler hadn't have flaked out because Kat got fired.
Right.
And Heyman was brought back to do commentary, which then left the Fox in charge of the chicken coop and have access to Vince's ear. And so then Heyman could have an opportunity to have a make good on all the guys that he owed money from ECW and get him another payday.
Get them all.
So, you know what I mean? So like, I can't say they should have done it this way or that was obviously wrong or that was obviously right because it was such a fluid situation. But because of so many things happening and along with the injuries that were starting to pile up in the Rock's departure, yeah, it was hot-shotting. And it was, we need to inject some life into this quickly because this is dying on the vine.
Well, obviously, putting Stephanie in that slot was so that ECW, obviously the more popular of those two companies, and Heyman ran it, they'd get all the pops. They'd get all the face pops because those guys are more loved clearly than any of those WCW guys.
Yeah, that's a pretty good point.
So clearly Stephanie was put there because she's very easily booable.
Yeah.
And now you'll hate her because here's somebody who's about as far from hardcore as you'll ever be running the hardcore half of... If it was the other way around and Stephanie was running WCW and Shane was running ECW, even that I think would have gotten some face pops. But I think you had to put the most unlikable personality in the entire company with ECW so they'd get booed.
You know? And Kevin was home with his hernia, so they had to go to Stephanie.
Yeah, I know. You know, my phone never rang. I kept checking it.
Yeah, the most unlikely arrangements.
You know, I'm over putting the earpiece to my ear and I'm doing the crank and I'm like, Betty Lou, are you there? Patch me through
Scott's house.
Patch me through to
yep.
Stanford 2845. Yes. I see. Scott, I understand that. Mm. And I completely disagree with that philosophy. That is very much the WWE's mindset. Because no one can be more popular than the WWE. We position everyone to be anti us. And if they are pro, then that makes us look like the bad guys, and we can't have that. I disagree with that philosophy. I think, again, by putting Stephanie with them, all it did was temper any reaction that they could have gotten. Because the WWF fans, they didn't... It made them not care about the ECW guys at all. All the heat went to Stephanie. Mm-hmm. None of the reaction went to the ECW guys. It just made them just, you know, undigested food left over in the colon.
Besides RVD.
And you notice how he didn't even seem to really align himself, as I do the air quotes. You know what I mean?
Right. No,
he was always doing his own thing because he was smart enough to know that he needed to get himself over. Mm-hmm. Everybody else was just happy to have a job. So, yeah, I think that was the absolute wrong thing to do for every reason possible. Because, yeah, write it out. Why are these guys popular? Let's start to tell that story. And then we find out over time that they're actually bad guys doing bad things. Okay, now the reaction might change.
Right.
So, I don't
know. Was RVD the biggest get, though, of all these guys? Of the two of those companies folding,
boy, he sure turned out to be.
Yeah, and now they immediately put him with probably the only other guy in the company that the only other non-main eventer that legitimately got pops just as much as him, and that was Jeff Hardy. And they immediately mm-hmm. put them in that match at Invasion. Was that would you consider that a dream match at that time in terms of popularity?
That seemed to be the philosophy, and I know that a lot of people, when the Invasion angle had started, we were talking about the different matchups that we could have. I don't really think that was one that was talked about, but it sure had, you know, it sure came out of nowhere. And Rob had been very, I guess, because Rob had come in one other time, and I was at 97 or 98, came in with Sabu. Wasn't that to a Connecticut Raw taping?
97.
It 97? But it was separate from the ECW thing. Hmm. Like it was after the ECW thing at Hammerstein.
Yeah, they came back in like May, and they did. Or maybe it was April and May, because they were still plugging the pay per view.
Right.
And they did the debate with Heyman and Lawler in the ring, and then RVD stuck around for a couple weeks and had a match. And yeah, Sabu fought Flash Funk Scorpio.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So it wasn't, you know, and there was always great affinity for those two guys within the company for whatever reason. I think probably because of Sabu being, you know, the son of the original Sheik. But anyway, so yeah, that was a diamond in the rough, as it were, because I don't think anybody expected RVD to be the biggest free agent catch out of that whole pool, but that's the way it sure wound up to be. Again, we were thinking, well, we'll get Goldberg and Sting and, you know, all of these guys will be here. It'll be wonderful. And none of it happened.
And RVD arguably was the best guy to get, though, when you think of, you know, age and performance and kind of capturing the, you know, younger fan more so than Sting or some of those other guys at the time.
Right. And certainly was never, ever going to get booed, no matter what he did.
Right.
So put Jeff Hardy in a tough spot. Go out. What do? You go out there and you have crash and burn. You just go out there and let it fly.
Cool. And we'll definitely
dream match scenario. See how it turns out.
We definitely get a lot more RVD to get to, especially as the year goes on. All right, one more Raw to talk about here before we get to our pay-per-view. The night in Providence, I was there live, Kevin. I'm not sure if you were, but you're back from your surgery yet. Leading in, it was the final Raw before the Invasion pay-per-view, when Tajiri stayed with Team WWF. He ripped off the Alliance shirt, and him and Regal kind of, it was like their moment to, you know, they had been together, but this was kind of them becoming equals. And then Steve Austin spent the night at the Friendly Tap, comes back with the pool cue, beats the shit out of the Alliance. And the place is just going bananas. I remember leaving the arena that night. Everyone was chanting Austin, and it was just everyone was going crazy. It was like our team had won the championship. Were you there at that show? Any memories of that night?
I was. I think those segments at the Friendly Tap were shot the night before, mm-hmm. and of course that was Timmy White's bar, And there was a lot of fisticuffs, right? There was a big fight there. Was that the big fight scenario?
No, that was with the APA. I didn't. Did Austin fight there, Scott? I thought he just got up and left, right?
No, he was playing pool.
Yeah.
Alone, and then he watched the. He was watching the Alliance guys kicking the shit out of everybody in the ring, and he snapped. He got pissed off, and he snapped the pool cue on the. He snapped the pool cue on the table, and then hopped in his truck.
Yeah.
And left. He was just sitting there wallowing in his own.
Okay, it was the APA one that was, I think, shot the night before, earlier in the afternoon. But anyway, the anytime that Timmy would have anybody over there, he was always very nervous. He was always appreciative of the plugs.
Tired of buying new stools.
Yeah. Well, we'd always just joke about, you know, because the Miller Lite, you know, light over the pool table got destroyed one time. And he's like, yeah, every time they come there, they destroy the place. I get all this new stuff, though, for free. It's awesome. But I think there was always a part of Timmy that he wanted to be the ultimate host. You know, so I always loved Tim White. He was just such a nice guy.
Does he still own that bar? I've never been. Amazingly.
I have no idea. I sure hope so.
I got to find out. I got to go at some point. I mean, I don't know how I've made it this far and not ever gone and sought it out.
Yeah, right. You're there. It's like,
I know, I don't get it. I have no idea.
Rhode Island is
again. I think what is it? Cumberland?
Yeah. Let's see. They're on Facebook. I'll look it up.
Yeah, I think it's Cumberland.
Yeah, they have karaoke March 7th. They have karaoke with Brandy followed by open mic.
Fantastic.
Cool.
There you go.
Check it out. Men in Road. I was just there yesterday. Actually, I must have drove by it. Didn't even notice.
Did he sell it?
He might have
sold it.
All right. Hmm. Either way.
I'll have to go in anyway.
So anyway, that moment itself, Kevin, one of my favorite moments to ever see live, just kind of Austin's last hurrah before going heel with the Alliance.
It was those moments were always really special. And I do remember the crowd's reaction leaving, actually. I remember the two moments that you mentioned, Tajiri and Regal, just because everything Regal does cracks me up. And and some of the things that he would sort of like say under his breath, you know, like, and he and Tajiri in those pre-tapes were always so much fun that it just cracked me up. So, yeah. And there was, right, there was this kid, dark-haired kid, who was crying after the show, and I said, what's your name, little boy? And he said, my name is Justin.
Oh,
and I love wrestling, and one day when I grow up, I want to be the place to be. And he ran away, and I think he had peed his pants or something. It was so sad, that little kid.
I probably ran away because you looked like a fucking ghost at that point. All white, all white and portly and fucking weird looking. I was probably like, what the hell is this guy
on his pain meds?
Oh my god, I almost choked to death.
Your fucking hernia sticking out.
You were so right. Hernia sticking out. Oh, god. No wonder I'm scaring children. Please stop crying, little boy.
And now we're best friends, Kevin. Look at that.
I can lose weight. I want to be in the place to be.
And that little boy yelled, finish strong, as he ran out of the arena.
And the light went on, and I said, someday.
13 years from now. All right, Scott, take us to the Invasion.
All right. So the Invasion pay-per-view in Cleveland. I think it was well-booked and well-received. It did a huge buy rate. And two things, two-prong question. Number one, what did you think of the whole tit-for-tat? Do you think the Alliance should have just dominated early and make the storyline WWF catches up? Or were you fine with them going back and forth, back and forth? And what did you think of the end of Austin pretty much returning heel and joining the Alliance at the end?
I didn't like that. Didn't like the because again, what was who is the enemy? What was their name? Who is your daddy? And what does he know? There were so many ways that you could have gone with this. You know, could the invading side have beaten everybody up and left them all laying? And I just kept going back to when I was in college and I was a big WCW fan through the Crockett days, and they bought Bill Watts's Mid-South, the UWF. And they slaughtered all the UWF guys, and that was it. And they absorbed a few of them. Sting and Terry Taylor and the Steiners. And, but you, I was like, God, you're leaving money on the table. I kept having that thought during this whole invasion, you know. But to be honest, I was starting to be very conflicted working there. Because I felt like it was on the decline and they weren't doing things the right way and that everybody was getting a little bit too big for their britches. At least I started to think that way. And so I really didn't understand what all the back and forth with Austin was about, because I felt like we needed something. I felt like we needed to have that one guy that we could count on, but maybe it was Steve that didn't want to do it, you know, because if Steve is in that, he doesn't have to work a whole lot. He doesn't have to do a whole lot when he's the heel. And if he's the babyface, he's got to get his ass whipped, got to be there for the comeback. And it's tough on the body and on the neck, you know, cause he was breaking down, you know, and, so there's a lot of factors going in there, and my way is not the right way. It's just I didn't agree with it.
Was everyone pretty thrilled with the buy rate for that show? Did they think things had turned around completely with the invasion starting?
And, No. I think everybody had a lot of uneasy feelings because there was a few different things. There was still sort of the shock of Rock is gone and Triple H is hurt. That was one side of it. And then there was the other side of, these WCW guys suck. Then there was another group that was, we're completely mismanaging these WCW guys, which I was in the camp of. And then there was the camp of, we are invincible and nothing can touch us because everything is great and we won the war. There were some people that were just happy. Like after I bought my house a couple of summers ago, I didn't do anything for months. I just sat in a chair and I was like a zombie. I was just transfixed, smiling. Yes, I bought a house. Yeah, you got to still take care of this thing. I bought the house. I don't care. There was a group of people that were like that. They were just happy that we won the war. So I was in the camp of the nattering nabobs of negativity who felt like we needed to kick ourselves in the ass again. And then there were some that were just hell-bent on shitting on everything that was WCW. So it was frustrating. So I don't think anybody really enjoyed the good buy rate, put it that way, because either they were trying to take credit for it or they were trying to say that it was it would have been better if, imagine if we would have had this. And then there was me who said, yeah, you had a good buy rate today, but what about tomorrow? What about 6 months from now? And then there was the other group that was like, hey, we beat WCW. Aren't we great? Didn't matter what we did.
Around this time, Jericho, or at least was rumored to have been, catching some heat with online fans and backstage for being sloppy. There are rumors he was even wearing lifts at this point. Any truth to the reason or a shift in perception of Jericho from kind of an internet favorite to a guy that kind of became a punching bag quickly? Also looked like he bulked up considerably around this time.
When he first came in, and we have talked about it here, everybody was internally was crapping all over him. And, well, he doesn't know how to work main event style. He doesn't know how to work WWF style, whatever. He had definite opinions about himself and his work. Needed to learn how to conversate better with others because the agents were different. The agents had credibility. The agents in WCW had no credibility. And because it was a guaranteed contract world, you got paid regardless of whether you did anything or not. So the people telling you what to do didn't matter. So, and not that Chris came in thinking, well, I know everything and you people know nothing. It just took him a little while to figure out, okay, who do I need to listen to here and what do I need to do? Because I'm getting conflicting information. I always found Jericho to be great. I never had one problem with him, and I never heard of anybody that had a problem with him. I'm just thinking that probably there was just a little bit of stylistic clashes, let's say, just nicely, just that, oh, you should have zigged when you could have zagged. Yeah, but I zigged and the zig was okay. As far as him wearing lifts are concerned, I have no idea. But if he did discover the magic beans, then so be it. All is good with me when it comes to the beans. I don't care.
Did it seem to you that he was feeling like a lot of pressure to deliver at this point? I think they had tried to elevate him and didn't really take. It seemed like he was working. It seemed like there's a stretch here, no wonder, where he stopped trusting himself in the ring. Like, just to the naked eye watching the match at home. Seemed like a guy who was rushing, going really fast, trying to get everything in. It just, he seemed to not be as at ease. Like, you watch him, you know, even today, it's like, guys are so smooth as silk. And even he was in WCW when he first came in. It seemed like a guy that had lost a lot of confidence.
I think that's probably a fair assessment. And as far as, hey, we're going to elevate you, but we're going to tie this enormous anvil around your ass. And that's just in our perception of you and the pressure that we're putting on you, because we have, you know, daggers shooting out of our eyes, and we really secretly want you to fail, even though we're paying you a lot of guaranteed money. There was all of that. So it's a real, you know, it's a unique soup when you're in that situation, because you want to prove them wrong, yet you're questioning yourself, yet you're getting a push, yet you're being sort of held down. It's an odd situation. And it takes getting used to, plus, you know, an adjustment. I don't know how big of an adjustment it was or it is. Rope as opposed to cable ropes. Mm-hmm. 20-foot ring as opposed to an 18-foot ring. It adds a step. It causes you to have to make adjustments in how you get into your moves. So maybe that could have been some of his hesitation. He should have been over that, though, by this point, I think.
What were your thoughts on the match at or the feud and then the match at SummerSlam between Kane and The Undertaker, the BOD, and the other tag team champions, DDP and who better than Canyon? Was Paige damaged beyond all repair after that ridiculous feud with Taker earlier in the year? And what were your memories of Canyon? I remember watching the shoot interview with James Mitchell, James Vandenberg. Mm-hmm. And he had nothing but great things to say about Canyon. What are some of your memories of Canyon and your thoughts on that feud?
Always a great guy. Just tremendously talented. I felt bad for him in that spot because the perception within the company was, and it was the reason why they eventually got split up, nobody can beat Kane and The Undertaker because of their size, because of their force, because of their presence. Nobody is going to beat the Brothers of Destruction. So that's why they eventually had to get split up. Mm-hmm. DDP was deader than 4 o'clock after he yanked that stupid motorcycle helmet off his head and then got his ass whipped by The Undertaker. There was no point in continuing this whole thing. Mm-hmm. But they did. So I felt badly for Canyon, who was kind of there to take a lot of big bumps because that's what he did really well. And held his own, I thought, and looked fine. Didn't look like, you know, boy, that sometimes that doesn't work. But was big enough to where, okay, between he and Paige, each guy 6'3", 6'4". All right, we got a little something here. And certainly Canyon was, you know, good enough to be able to put himself in positions to, you know, move with some, offensive effectiveness.
What did you think of the whole page? Just the fallout, losing in the cage, and then, Sarah beats him on Raw and pins him. I mean, just not good, right?
No, just another example of just the whole thing with WCW and the invade. That, to me, was the poster child of, you know, there really were three events that where I said this invasion thing is going to go nowhere. And one was the match that they had with where they brought out Scott Hudson and Arn Anderson to announce. And it was Booker T and Buff Bagwell, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yep. That was an abortion. And then the second one was when Booker T beat up Stone Cold. Mm-hmm. And did he hurt him?
Yeah, he busted his hand and busted his back up, I think.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That was it. And I was like, oh, that's not going to be good. And then the third one was Taker and Sarah beating up DDP. That was pretty much those three elements right there was the beginning, middle, and the end of the invasion, as far as I was concerned. It was dead after all that because we weren't getting Goldberg. We weren't getting Sting. And it was just dead. D-E-D, dead.
All right, staying at SummerSlam, what are your thoughts on Steve Austin, Kurt Angle at that show? Its place in the Great Match Pantheon. Did the kind of screwy finish take away from it at all to you, or is it still just a great match overall?
No, it was a great match overall, and I think the screwy finish worked in that scenario. I'm not normally one who, but I think that, again, any limitations that Steve had, we needed to work around them. And so sometimes a little bit of, you know, smoke and mirrors can help get you through in some tough times. But yeah, that was great. And I know Kurt was very appreciative of Steve. And I think if I remember correctly, I know Steve probably would have, that was the whole thing. After Steve broke his neck, there was always a big part of him that felt great regret that he wasn't able to do everything that he wanted to do in the ring. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure that he felt that way with Kurt.
Did you like the dynamic with Kurt as a face?
Where he did all the goofy stuff?
Well, now we're kind of past that now, where he was doing a lot of the serious stuff here. And well, he did the milk truck. Oh, we didn't really talk about Milkomania and all that. What was your any fond memories of Milkomania?
See, I don't know. it was great visual and very creative, but I felt like we had already done that. And it played perfectly in with Kurt's character. But yeah, there was something that just sort of rang a little hollow about it. I don't know. It's kind of like the idea now that the only thing that the WWE can do to help save WrestleMania this year is to bring out every old guy possible. And we cannot let the young guys take over. We can't let the young guys move forward. You know, sometimes you got to try new ideas to put the brand on the new guys. And if you put a new guy in an old guy situation, people remember, oh, I remember when Steve Austin did that. Why is Kurt doing the same thing? Well, it's milk instead of beer. Oh, yeah. I'm supposed to like him more now. So I think it puts everybody in a tough spot. You want to do something new and fresh as opposed to raking over old ground.
Did you enjoy the Alliance singing Wind Beneath My Wings to Steve Austin?
No.
No?
No. No. Did you?
Yeah, it was all right.
Come on.
I like seeing Raven sing.
That was the best part. Raven singing the song. Raven singing Bette Midler. How can you go wrong with that?
So I like Raven in the whole invasion thing. I like Raven a lot.
Yeah.
I think more Raven. That's all I wanted.
Also, the same night, that thing started the what from Steve Austin.
Which was born out of a voicemail message left on Steve's phone by
Christian.
Yes. Christian. Yep. Christian. JR for the point.
Yeah.
So, what?
What? Did you, how quick before you get sick of that completely?
2 weeks?
Yeah. Still going today, though.
At least they stop. Ugh.
Well, Vince was the best. What did he do one time? He completely owned them. Or no, Taker. What did he say? He said, like, say what if I slept with your mom or something like that. So he shut them down completely one time. And then I think Vince did it, too. He got them pretty good.
I remember Vince's. I don't remember the verbiage, but...
Yeah, Vince had a good one.
Yeah. And the idea and the thing that I've always said is if... Whatever you're doing, just power through it.
Right.
Just ignore it.
Right. Don't stop.
The minute you look at them, then they got you. Oh, he's not playing with us. You know, it's like you're trying to annoy somebody. I'm touching you. I'm not touching you. And if you stop and, you know, you just ignore them, then they'll go away. Mm-hmm. And that's the idea.
All right, some quick hits here on gimmicks. All this name, I'm giving you just a couple thoughts on each. Perry Saturn and Moppy.
For all the stupid gimmicks in the world and the guy who didn't need it because he was just a badass and a great wrestler. I enjoyed Perry Saturn and Moppy. I don't know what it was. It was just charming. You know, and she met her inevitable downfall in the chipper there. I felt bad.
Raven put it through the chipper.
That son of a bitch. I just said nice things about Randy.
And then he killed Moppy.
I think it was, you know, whenever a guy throws himself into something stupid, it's endearing, like you said. It's very
yeah.
I'll say honorable, but something about it. Sean Stasiak.
Oh, what an idiot that guy was. What a heat machine. You know why he got fired, right?
The first time, right, was the audio recording?
Taping conversations, yeah.
Yeah, and nobody had ever forgot that. So when they brought him back, it was just like, oh, what is this goof doing back here? See, that was another bad decision. Why bring back crummy guys?
Right.
Just because you have
cheap.
Yeah, well, we had enough guys that could work cheap. How about some guys that had a brain in their head? And he's not a dumb guy. He's a chiropractor. But, oh, my God, he just didn't get it. He didn't fit in. Although he tried, bless his heart.
Yeah, that was funny for a while, though, where he kept, like, trying to prove himself, and he kept missing and diving into, like, walls. And that was pretty funny the first few times they did it, though. He's trying to impress Austin, and he's, like, missing Rock, and he misses another guy, and he's diving into, like, cabinets and lockers. And it was they kind of played up the fact he was a Nimrod.
I like wrestling. That's a drop for you right there. I like wrestling. I like wrestling matches and wrestling rings over issues. I don't like stupid nonsense. Perry Saturn with Moppy was a rare exception.
What did you think of Chuck Palumbo and Sean O'Hare as a tag team?
God, they were badasses, right?
Mm-hmm.
Mm. I liked them. I thought they always had a cool look. I would have bought them. I didn't know why they never did. Well, they did do a lot with each guy. Then, of course, Chuck turned gay, and that was a whole big thing. You know, golly. You think you know somebody. Him and Billy Gunn. Then they go gay. So, yeah, I thought they were big enough and bad enough, could have fit in. You know, Sean was an odd bird.
Mm-hmm.
Chuck was, you know, straight shooter. Everybody seemed to like him. And Sean had his own ways of looking at things.
How about Hurricane and Molly?
That was my favorite. My absolute favorite. When she had the little costume on with him, I enjoyed that a lot. Hurricane, I liked. And he was a, let's look, other than Flair, okay, who had the best, and I'm not talking about the guys that came over pre-invasion. Out of everybody that came over from the invasion, did they get more out of the Hurricane than anybody else?
He's going to be up there.
Mm.
I don't know if he's number one.
Well, who did they do more? Booker
RVD.
T. See, RVD to me doesn't count. All right, I meant in terms of all WCW right. guys. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Because I was thinking like, all right.
Anyone who doesn't prove my point just doesn't count.
No. Because RVD, yeah, I would say RVD, definitely.
I think
but
Booker.
he was the ECW guy. Booker yeah. T. All right, so Booker and then Hurricane, right?
Mike Sanders.
Booker, then Hurricane, and then above average Mike Sanders.
I liked Mike Sanders. Why didn't he work? He was a good talker. Thought he could have made it there.
That's all anybody ever said about him.
Right. Well, make him a manager.
What about Mike Sanders? God, he's a good talker.
Make him a manager. Managers.
Because when you heard this sound, ding, 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 it was all over.
I'm not saying he didn't have to wrestle. Let him talk.
Oh, always need managers.
He was a heater. I guess. Now he's a stand-up comedian, right? And an actor?
Is he? Good for him.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
I liked him. He's a good dude.
Hmm.
He didn't aggravate me, but supposedly he had just had the knack to be able to wind people up. And that was sort of like his charm, I thought.
Hmm.
Isn't that his job?
Right.
Isn't that what he's the antagonist. He's good at antagonizing people.
Did you think they kind of ended the... I know you liked the Molly thing with Hurricane, but did you feel like they ended the Spike and Molly thing too quickly? Because it felt like they spent all that time getting them together, and then they break them up to do this. Like, it just kind of seemed weird, like they brainwashed her or something.
I'm trying to remember my feelings about that. I liked Molly no matter what she did. I didn't like Molly when they were talking about her hymen. That I hated. I absolutely hated that. Hated it. Hated it. And if I was Chris Nowinski, I would have said I got concussions too. Because I could always blame the concussions on that horrible piece of business.
Mm-hmm.
I thought she was cute. I thought she was fun. She could wrestle. There was great just chemistry, whether it was I think Spike, they were a little bit creepified with that. I don't know what it was. The closer they got together, the more they looked at him like, maybe this isn't right. I don't know. Mm. You know what I mean?
Mm.
But there was a charm with those two. There's no doubt about it. And then there was that fun charm with the Hurricane, you know, in a strictly like, you know, asexual way. Whereas with Molly, there was a Molly and Spike. There was a little bit of that kind of the underdog, ugly guy meets pretty girl. But they kind of pigeonholed her as the ugly girl, you know, kind of. Oh, isn't that cute?
Right.
Look, they're good. The two retarded kids are going to kiss. The two people with Down syndrome are going to kiss now.
Oh, my God.
I kind of do that.
They're holding hands in the park. Isn't that sweet?
It's like a sitcom.
It is. That's kind of how I think they viewed her.
Arnold
really.
And the girl in the wheelchair.
Like Life Goes On when Corky got the pick.
Oh, God, I knew you were you're going to get there at some point.
I jumped up and down. I was like, this is the funniest thing I've ever seen in my whole life. When's a new season of the Little People show coming on?
They broke up. I just saw it. It was on trending. It's better than trend next Wednesday, Kevin. Okay. We could have talked about it.
Not the one that's adopted the two Asian kids.
No, the Little People Big World.
He was a dick.
He was an asshole.
He was a dick.
Yeah, they broke up. Derek LaRue must be crying since he left the show.
Yes.
Kevin, maybe we'll talk about that Wednesday. We'll see if it's still topical.
Well, we can't sidetrack here on this.
All right. Let's talk midgets.
Please, no.
Talk your favorite midgets, the ones you hate the most.
Scott, why? Was there
names,
a problem?
Midget food. What do you want us to talk about?
Midgets.
Ugh. Scott does not like midgets.
Don't like
really? Regal hates midgets.
I feel like a midget.
Yes.
I've always knew I liked him.
I feel like a midget did something to Scott when he was like a kid or something and scarred him for life for the way he
little Lord Littlebrook refused my autograph at a house show.
Like a midget like pissed in his fucking shoe or something at some park and he got all mad about it.
Like he was a Doberman.
Something happened. Some midget thing happened.
I don't know.
And pissed you off as a kid and now you just despise them.
Despise them. My goddaughter liked Little People, Big World. That's
my
one.
Wife did too. A stupid show.
Ugh. That guy was an asshole. I think the wife could have kicked his ass, too.
Yeah, she looked like a tough broad.
Yeah, she looked... I liked her, actually. She was, like, the one character I liked. He was a douche.
I like other characters, too. You know, they're actual people.
The character of the wife is played by a bitchy wife.
I didn't really get it. So they can have regular-sized kids, huh? This is probably not a path we should go down.
Well, wait a minute. Jer, I'm glad you said it, because I was just about to ask the same thing. So, memory serves me correctly, on that show... There was at least one child that had dwarfism,
four kids, and it was two and two.
Oh my gosh!
Yeah, they were batting 500.
Pretty good average.
Well, 750.
It gets you into Cooperstown. Hey, so how do you feel if you're the midget kid?
You definitely got screwed, right?
Yeah, really.
And if you're the regular size kid, do you feel guilty, or are you like, ha ha?
It did seem like the regular size kids were like. The most well-adjusted of the family, because you could tell they probably felt bad. Like, it seemed like they were always, like, the most helpful and the nicest on the show.
Like, the one
like they were afraid to be assholes.
Yeah. The one midget kid was, like, a soccer player or something.
And he was, like, the breakouts. He was the one they were pushing the hardest on that show.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were trying to give him the big baby face push, but he was never really going to get above, like, Brad Armstrong.
Right. He was never going to get above Wink.
He was never going to get above Moppy. So.
He was never going to get above Wink. He would never get the Tiger Jackson level.
Oh. See, I meant it in terms of like regular sized people, and you just strictly just, he just cornholed that guy as a midget. That's all he could ever be.
No.
It's a great.
When I rode with Moolah and Mae Young, I think I told this story on the other show. I can't remember.
Mae Young must have had a few midgets in her day.
No, well, I'm sure she did. Moolah had the one that they kept, Diamond Lil. lived at the house, they referred to her as the midget.
If we keep talking about this, JR, you can just cut this part and put it on next week's show, and you guys only have to record for like 40 minutes.
I might have to. This is let's move on. Kevin, we'll move on from midgets to hotties because two of the
hottest the guy, women. Scott says, the guy who shows up 25 minutes late to his own show.
Right. All right, we're going a little bit long here, guys.
Oh, excuse me, big time. We were scheduled last night.
That's true.
I know I had to buy a car. I apologize. We told that story off the air.
Why? Because the truck broke down again?
What, my truck?
Yeah.
No. We were...
We already talked about the truck. You can tell him off the air.
You can tell me off air about the truck. All right, talk about your hotties.
Okay, bye.
Go to your hotties.
Stacy and Tori, Kevin Kelly, two of the hottest women in wrestling come in. Thoughts on them? Did they fit right into the locker room? Did they... were they enjoyable? I'll leave it at that.
You want to talk about... All right, I'll give you a boner-matic story, right?
Yeah. Uh-oh.
Right, hang on, let me loosen my shorts. Sorry, go ahead.
Victoria. Lisa Marie.
Yeah.
Was my friend, because I had, was there when she first had gotten started. And she called me when Tori Wilson was available and said, "Oh, hey, Kevin, I just was calling you because... I just wanted to let you know that Tori Wilson is here with me right now. We're out buying bikinis." No lie. That's what she said to me. Mm-hmm. And I was like, yeah. And well, I just wanted to see, could you like put a word in for her and see if we could, cause she's really awesome and really smart and really great. And I'm like, well, yeah, sure. And I couldn't get past that. Why are you shoehorning that mention of what you're doing? And it just seemed like, anyway, that was like, and obviously it stayed with me all those years. I was like, hey, Lisa Marie called me when her and Tori Wilson were out bikini shopping. Yeah.
Where does Tori?
That was an easy sell. Oh, by the way, Tori Wilson, guys. Oh, okay. Y'all call her up.
Well, let me ask you this. First of all, which did you prefer at the time? Tori or Stacy?
Oh. I guess Tori only because everybody else was on Stacy Keibler.
I like Tori too.
I like Tori more too.
Oh, I like Stacy Keibler now. I got to zig when y'all zag. I got to be the yin to the yang. Come on. No, overall, I thought like everybody drooled all over Stacy Keibler.
Right. Tori was the more well-proportioned.
Yeah. And while, I thought Tori was kind of more that
booty
solid,
Bootylicious.
Bootylicious. There you go. Good work.
What, all right, so where does Tori rank then in your all-time one-year run of a hot diva? Like, Sunny 96 being the benchmark.
And yes.
Tori 01 is right there with her, I think. Any others that you would rank in there? Trish, any of her years?
Nicole Bass.
Donna Christianello.
Velvet McIntyre.
Did Nicole Bass check you for your hernia? Is that why you had to go in for surgery?
Actually, she gave me one. She
pulled a little.
She
too hard.
Stepped on my toe and then did the big Herman Munster laugh. Oh. Hey, Dawn Marie, got to give her a little prop.
Oh, yes, Dawn Marie.
Yeah, Dawn Marie.
Especially during the lesbian thing with Tori.
Yeah.
Probably one of the greatest SmackDown segments ever.
When I had my hernia surgery, I tried my wrestler rescue card, and they wouldn't take it.
Ooh.
Well, I thought it was legit. No, is that not legit?
You tell us. You're in.
Are
the,
we not getting
you're
her
the
as
union,
guest?
Not us.
Huh? Is she not going to be a guest on the show?
Well, probably not anymore.
Oh well. Yeah, I would say. Yeah, Tori up there with who was the other one?
Sunny.
Sunny 96.
Sunny 96. Give me a break.
Trish, I think. I don't know what year of Trish. There's so many good ones.
Well, what about Lita?
Lita 06 with Edge.
Yeah, when she was a.
I think so.
Oh, God, yeah.
Tramp. Oh, she was awesome.
She had the open shirt with her tits half hanging out.
They were glistening. Yeah.
And then what about China when she wrestled?
No.
When she wrestled Jericho and Mark Henry and was in the Rumble? No?
No.
Okay.
Come on.
Well, I didn't say
come on.
Tita.
Come on.
I'm just saying,
man.
Are we ranking one-year runs?
And then draft.
Yeah, that was her best year, but she's not in the conversation with these.
Yeah, she's not with Sonny.
Come on.
How about Sable 03?
Yeah.
Not bad.
I was never a big Sable fan.
What about Sable 98?
No.
Mm.
I think Sonny blew her away every other
year. Yeah, I think Sonny blew her away, too.
All right, Sable in her wrestling gear. That's when I liked her the best.
When she used to do the grind. Oh, nobody liked that. It was when she talked. That's when everything was done with her.
I think we're probably missing like current, more newer ones like Maryse. She had a good run.
Yeah, Maryse had a great run.
See, I don't know any of those girls. It's so weird. Because I quit watching the shows.
Were you in Ring of Honor with Lacey Von Erich?
No. No, she was never there. That was a different Lacey.
Oh, that's right. That was a Lacey with... Lacey Von Erich was in TNA.
Yeah. I think Lacey in Ring of Honor was Becky Bayless, who was...
Was it?
I thought so. Maybe not.
You weren't Ring of Honor when Tracy Brooks was there. I always thought she was hot, too.
Yeah. Ooh. No, I wasn't. But
That was when Punk was there. That was like 05.
I certainly had recommended Tracy Brooks several times for working opportunities in the company.
Love her. Loved her.
How about Maria? Great. How about Maria 2013? 14. Now. Tomorrow.
Forever. All right. This is a better topic than midgets. Anyway.
There you go.
She's aged well. All right, go ahead, Scott.
Okay. So the company's cruising along. Yeah, you get some storyline hiccups, but you guys are rolling. And then the two numbers that will forever be linked together happened. That was, of course, 9/11. You had that SmackDown in, I think it was Houston.
Yes.
What were your memories of those few days after and your thoughts on that really hideous speech that Stephanie gave where she said that we'll stop the terrorists like my father. We'll beat the terrorists like my father beat the government or something of that nature.
Yeah.
First off, your thoughts on those few days after and then your thoughts on the speech.
Very weird. I was not on the road at this point now going forward. Because I had transitioned over and I was still doing talent relations and I was soon transitioning over to being a producer for Confidential.
Mm-hmm.
So thankfully, I was home when all of 9/11 happened. Because all those people, they were kind of stuck there and nobody really knew what was going on for a few days. Speech, horrible. Completely just utterly lacking any sensitivity or grip on reality or anything.
Yeah.
Pretty much anything that she says, I always view through that prism.
Mm-hmm.
Like whatever things that she had done or said before, it's like, okay, you know, it's a character. This was just douchey.
Was. I agree.
Heyman was sort of the rock star of that show, right? Did Heyman do something on that, or was that behind the scenes? Help me out.
I don't remember him being. I don't think I've ever seen that show again since it aired.
The only time they ever put it on DVD was when they did the top 100. When they did their 10-year SmackDown set, and they did the top 100 moments, it was number one. But it wasn't the whole episode. It was just.
I know Heyman was very emotional about. The whole thing, you know,
as a New Yorker,
A New Yorker. And there were a lot of the crew that was there. A lot of the production assistants and producers and things like that were from New York. So it was emotional for them and not as much, you know, from guys from California or whatever. It was, you know, Tuesday. Oh, it's Wednesday. Oh, it's Thursday. Oh, yeah, that's kind of bad. You know, the buildings blew up. I don't think anybody really felt like the full gravity of it, unless you were kind of in that tri-state area or if you knew people that were there or if you were in Washington. And I'm not saying this to be like, you know, you have to be there. You don't understand it, you know, cause it just took a little while for everything to process, you know, but those of us that were in, cause you guys were in JR, where were you at that time?
I was in Worcester.
Okay. You were in high school?
College.
And Scott, you were,
I was working at the radio station in Bridgeport, WICC, WB108. Yep.
Okay.
I was on the air that day.
And, oh, yeah. And so I was driving down the Merritt and was listening to Imus, and they had talked of, you know, what was the newsman's name? McCord.
Charles.
Charles McCord said, oh, a plane has flown into one of the towers of World Trade Center. And my first thought was, oh, my God, a little, some stupid prop plane flew into
like
the World
Trade
Center.
Yeah, like a puddle jumper. Yeah.
What an idiot. That guy's going to be fired. Oh, my gosh. And then my phone rang, and it was my wife. Or no, I called her. And I said, hey, put on the TV just in case. And she screams, oh, my God, you know, flipping out. What happened? So just sat at work all day and watched TV and was looking at those images. But yeah, very, you know, it's very much like the Owen tribute show in a way, because there's no right way or wrong way to do it. But there was a wrong way to do it with Stephanie. Ugh.
Here was the card. September 14th, 2001, because it was live on that Friday. Yep. From the Compaq Center. Matt and Jeff Hardy defeated the Hurricane and Lance Storm. RVD pinned Spike Dudley. Jericho pinned Christian. The Rock pinned Sean Stasiak. Acolytes beat X-Pac and Albert. Booker T beat Big Show. Big shock there. Lita pinned Ivory. Test and the Dudleys beat Tajiri Regal and Scotty Tuhati. Kurt Angle pinned Rhino. And then the dark match was Rock beat Steve by DQ.
I think Bradshaw did a speech.
Mm, I have a feeling
I remember
think
him doing something on air.
Yeah, I do too.
Yes, you're right. Absolutely, you're right. I do remember that.
And Vince opened the show.
Yeah, Vince opened the show. I remember the Test, Dudley's six-man, and the main. Those are the two things I remember. So
I don't think Heyman would have done anything because they were. I think they were still trying to stay a little bit in.
Yeah, I think maybe it was just then he, it may have been a backstage thing. And hearing about that after the fact.
Mm.
All right. Do you think they handled the Edge and Christian split well? Was it time to finally break them apart? Did you enjoy their two matches? And did you think Christian got enough shine?
You know, the Sean Marty comparison was certainly obvious, and I'm always on the wrong side of these arguments. I was always a Christian guy, you know. Not that I disliked Edge at all. I liked him. But I just thought Christian was a better wrestler. And I didn't think Christian got enough. I don't think he got enough credit. I don't think he got enough in those matches. It was the same thing. Like, I didn't want to see them fighting one another. You just hate that. And we learned that, like, with, you know, when the Hardys fought each other, blah. When Mark and Jay wrestled each other, blah. You know, the Briscoes, it's like, ugh. People just don't want to see that. People didn't want to see Edge and Christian fight each other, too. So there's no right way. There's no wrong way to do split like that. Well, there is a wrong way. There's no right way to do it, I think. It's very difficult.
Did you think Christian needed a new look? I know he'd get one eventually, but I feel like at this point, he still had that mesh shirt, the long hair. Like, it didn't scream like a guy set for any kind of singles push. Like, he still kind of looked like, I don't say an indie guy, but kind of like a cruiser kind of guy. You know, he didn't look to me like anything that was ready to break out, anyone that was ready to break out.
It's a fair argument, and I think that's been the thing with him his whole career. Which is why the team of Edge and Christian and the Brood work so perfectly together. You know, I don't think he was ever going to be bigger than what he was in that team. But he has had a very long career and he's made a lot of money. So I guess it's okay. But I would agree with you.
Mm. Like, his hair never looked as good as Edge's. You know, Edge had that like flowing mane. Christian's always looked ragged, and he definitely needed to cut it. He definitely needed to cut it. The tights and the shirt, JR and I talked about this on the vault. Could have lasted a little bit, but the hair just never looked right.
It's stringy. His hair
not
looks
like
stringy.
Edges. Yeah.
You say that again, like it's like, oh, not like Edge's.
Yeah, he's an Edge. You think Triple H is his big one, but he's an Edge mark too.
Really?
I like Edge too. Yeah, I like Edge. I like Edge. Okay. Two guys that JR loves.
Ronnie.
All right. Unforgiven. Kevin?
Yes.
In Pittsburgh, we had the tag team titles, the Brothers of Consumption, taking on the aforementioned team, Mr. Clark and Mr. Adams. What were your thoughts on that match? Because it is obviously considered one of the worst pieces of crap in the history of tag team wrestling. Is it as bad as it looked? Like, if you were looking at it live, was it really that bad? And did Taker kind of sandbag those guys and say, well, it was all their fault they were out of shape?
No, it was all their fault they were out of shape. They were awful. Because Taker liked him. You know what I mean?
This was all his baby, right? This was his whole little setup. Yeah. He brought these guys in. He's an Adams guy.
Taker didn't work with people that he, you know, wasn't just like, hey, we're going to throw a new guy at you. Right. No, it's, what do you think about, you know, and he would come with guys all the time and be like, hey, how about we do this? How about we do that? And loyal to his friends, loyal to a fault sometimes. And that was what happened here. Because PU stink. What a dreadful, horrible match.
Now, both were asked to go down to OVW to kind of, you know, get back in the groove and then come back. Adams did. Clark didn't. Why did Clark walk? Did he feel insulted?
I thought it was the other way around.
No, Adams went down. And then he would leave eventually.
Yeah, he didn't stay long, but he accepted the assignment.
He initially said, all right, I'll go. And Clark said, yeah, go
Clark
pound
said,
sand.
Fuck yourself.
Yeah. Huh.
Yep.
Adam Bomb said no. I have learned something new here tonight.
Mm-hmm. I should double check. I mean, that's
no,
Scott, we
no,
talked
no,
to,
okay. Double check. Don't need to double check. I'm sure
just
I'm wrong.
Double check. Well, Scott, we mentioned it on the last show, and no one corrected us. And usually, we have everyone jump all over us when we screw up.
Yeah,
so.
I'll look.
I think we're right.
I'll go to.
You know what? Yes, there is something that feels oddly familiar about your retelling of that story because
Clark left immediately. Adams was released in November.
There's a part of me that says I was surprised that a guy like Adam Bomb didn't say yes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, at least with Brian, you know, there was some history there and track record there. And hadn't he proven himself enough already?
Right. I can't imagine he would have stayed down there long. So, yeah, you're right. It is kind of surprising.
Yeah.
I mean, where else are you going to go at this point? But, yeah, it was definitely him because Adams was around till November. So he took the assignment and then left.
Yeah.
He was released.
And that was the move. They had done that with a lot of people. Let's move him down. Let's send him down to AAA for a little while. He gets some reps in the cage. A whole lot of that.
Was that one of the worst matches you've ever seen?
Yeah, it's bad.
As far as like
the only match I get that,
like,
right, as far as pay per view with men, yeah, that was the worst.
Worse than the Kennel from Hell.
Match wasn't bad.
Yeah.
The stip was bad. The match itself was fine. I felt so badly for those two guys in there killing themselves for nothing.
Okay. According to Wiki, both men were accosted. After the WWF's purchase of WCW, Chronic appeared in WWF as part of the Alliance storyline. During their time in WWF, they were managed by Steven Richards and were placed in a short feud with the Brothers of Destruction. Adams and Clark faced and lost to the duo at Unforgiven. Both men were accosted by The Undertaker in the locker room after the match for their lackluster performance. Clark was released from his WWF contract after refusing to go to the then WWF Developmental Territory Heartland Wrestling Association in Cincinnati. While Adams did go there, he performed until he too was released in November.
Was that true, Kev? The Undertaker thing? Were you there?
No, I wasn't there, but I definitely remember it. Accosted—that's a strong word.
Yeah, I was thinking that too. Like, would Taker like potatoed him?
Yeah,
weird.
Nightstick. Hey, boss man, can I borrow that? Thanks. Come here, you. He was walking the beat.
They both went to World Wrestling All Stars in early 2002.
Went to
Japan.
All right, enough Chronic. Should Booker T have gone over The Rock at all in this feud, or do you think the feud itself took care of legitimizing him even though he lost? So he lost to him at SummerSlam straight up, and Rock won the WCW title. The next month at Unforgiven, Booker and Shane lost to Rock in a handicap match. So Booker did not go over either time.
I don't know how losing to The Rock could have helped him. I think it hurt him. Do you think so?
Yeah, I mean, there's something to say with them seeing him on Rock's level, that they put him in a SummerSlam match together.
He was a five-time WCW champion.
I mean, there was a little bit of a dream match at the time, I thought, with those two.
I agree.
And I agree, but then I think he needed to go over.
Do you think he should have went over at SummerSlam?
Yes.
Wow, and you would have had the show end with both Alliance guys with the titles?
Yeah, well, that's what they should have done. This is the whole thing we've talked about, right? That the Alliance didn't go strong enough.
Right. You sacrifice. It's pain today for pleasure tomorrow.
Ooh.
Where are we going in 6 months? That's what I don't understand. This whole thing was booked just so poorly and, you know, on the fly and week to week, and what's Vince saying today, and who likes this guy, who doesn't like this guy, are we doing a tour with them, are we not doing a tour with them, what are we doing with them, why did I buy them again, oh yeah, the tape library, what's his name, well, that's Booker T, who is he, it's a lot of that. So yeah, it was just as somebody who was I was not a WCW guy, but I was a Jim Crockett guy back in the day.
Oh yeah.
And just seeing how that company, what had happened to it, and then for Vince to buy it, only then to bring it in and, you know, hook the battery cables up to its nipples, shock it back to life, but then only to piss on it and stomp on it with boots and then kick it and run it over broken glass some more. It just bothered me a lot. a lot.
And I did ask you in April if I could referee some matches on it.
Now, if he was there...
He should
the Alliance would have all had purple. The Alliance would have had pink polos on and tights with termites on them.
The king of the cockroaches.
Just think.
All right.
So, right, Booker T, Spinner Rooney, clotheslines Rock, or double clothesline. Both men are down. Lights go out. Lights come back up. Then a stamp in the ring. On the trampoline. Jumping up and down with the weights. Then he starts to go spin-a-rooney style, you know, swirling around in a circle like Terry Funk with the ladder. The Stamp-a-rooney, right?
The Stamp-a-rooney.
KOs both guys with the weights in his hands, stacks them up like cordwood, cover 1, 2, 3. Dennis Stamp has defeated The Rock and Booker T in one night.
Not booked.
Referee me and Brett.
I already have other arrangements tonight.
Taking my mom.
I don't do any tricks.
Okay. Taking my mom out to Sizzler.
All right, Scott. Kurt Angle. Okay. 9/11. Let's talk.
All right. So, of course, the main event of Unforgiven, Kevin, was the rematch from SummerSlam between Steve Austin and Kurt Angle. This time, Angle wins. Was that the whole plan all along? Was it because they were in Pittsburgh? Or was Austin supposed to win, but when 9/11 happened, they figured we need a feel-good moment?
The scenario of it being in Pittsburgh and fitting in with the original plan. I think it was the original plan.
Okay.
And that it may have just coincidentally worked out that we needed a feel-good moment. Because... you'd already gone with Austin turning back SummerSlam, et cetera, et cetera. And now we go to Pittsburgh the next month and it just was ripe for revenge. So, yeah, I think the 9/11 thing just was a secondary thought to what was already kind of baked in the cake at that point.
I know he's had a long career since, but do you think this was like Angle's peak moment at home? Everyone, you know, his family all there, raising on his shoulders, wins a title, ref 9/11, top face of the company.
Yeah, gosh.
Right? I mean, and he, the personal stuff hadn't really built up. Like, he'd have great matches later, but it was after things had kind of come out. But like, at this point, he was still kind of, everyone loved him, you know?
Mm. Yeah, that was probably it. I think, you know, the, it's funny, the most memorable moment was him shaving, his, him getting his head shaved by Edge.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's the only guy in wrestling that I can think of that kept his head shaved.
Yeah.
Since he lost his hair.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that that was obviously it. That was the biggest moment of Angle's career as far as emotion and everything coming together.
Mm-hmm.
Could have been with, you know, Hunter and Stephanie and him. That would have been very interesting. But this was by far, you know, kind of that hometown hero moment.
All right, Jericho's feud with The Rock. Did this feel like a final chance to finally elevate him? He was kind of in a weird spot at the time. He either had to move up or kind of move on. Felt like he had been stagnant for a while on the same level. They tried to move him up earlier in the year. It didn't really take. How would you rank all their matches? They fought at No Mercy, they fought on Raw, and then would have a couple more later. So let's look at those first two. So the match at No Mercy is where Jericho finally busted through and won the WCW title, and then Rock won it back on Raw.
I thought by now they had worked out any kinks that they might have had physically with each other. And I think they got along well. I think there was good communication between the two of them. And there was good flow. I think Jericho benefited when, you know, Pat Patterson was his agent. And I go back to the agent just because, again, you always want to know where you stand.
Mm-hmm.
And Pat was such a great agent that he looked out for everybody. He didn't, even though he had favorites, he didn't play favorites, let's say. He always wanted the match to be his favorite. So, yeah, I think that confidence, comfort, wanting to make a good match without putting so much pressure on yourself that you go, you know, a step too fast and everything sort of gets out of kilter. I think we could see that there.
Do you think that they, do you think it was better to have Jericho in that spot than maybe like RVD? Because I had said, we had talked about it on the show when we did that vault, that I thought that instead of RVD jobbing in the three-way, when we'll talk about that match in a minute, they should have had him beat Rock here and let Jericho kind of sit in that three-way. And then you could have matriculated to whatever happened to Jericho down the line, but would have been better for RVD to beat Rock and then let Jericho eat the pin? Or do you think that would have been, would that have been like the final nail for him?
Yeah, and I think I always try to look big picture at these things, like why, what's the perception of everybody? And I think that I don't know if RVD he certainly never let anybody's perception about him affect him. Whatever your view of Rob's was, Rob was going to do his thing his way.
Mm-hmm.
I think that there started, because I know Kevin Dunn always liked Jericho, and there was always a belief in the TV studio that this guy was special. He was really talented. There were things that he could do that nobody else could do, mainly talk. And and Van Damme was so rotten on the mic that nobody ever wanted to hear him speak.
Hmm.
So again, depending on what day of the week it is and what time you get to Vince, you can convince him of almost anything. And you could get him to change his mind if you are of the persuasion. So if they did have any thoughts or designs about RVD up and Jericho not up, and how that changed and then going to Rock and how those scenarios all played out, it could have just been because it was Tuesday and he just had like a, you know, protein shake and he was in a good mood.
Hmm.
And Kevin Dunn came over to meet with him and said, Jericho, you know, Jericho. And Vince said, Jericho. Yes. That's all it took sometimes.
Hmm. So putting RVD then in that triple threat main event with Austin and Angle, did that loss, he ate the pin, did that start to kind of sap his heat, dull his shine?
Who, RVD?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, because the belief was is that he was a spot guy and he could take, he could, he, you could beat him and it's never going to diminish his how over he is.
See, I thought I thought I heard of Mystique a little bit. This guy had, he was kind of, I don't know, compare it to Goldberg, but he could have been there. Goldberg came in, he hadn't even, you know, eaten a pin, taken a loss. He was a juggernaut. Fans loved him. And I feel like his first loss should have been something bigger than this. I know it's a world title match, but this was a kind of a throwaway pay-per-view, a three-way where he's thrown into this feud with Austin and Angle. And I don't know, it just felt like a waste of a guy that had a lot. If you were going to make him lose, I thought it should have been in a different situation.
Well, you don't want to beat Austin in that situation,
no, you beat
do
Angle
you?
Again. Who cares at this point?
What do you mean?
He eats the pin.
Yeah,
no. To do what?
What do you mean?
No.
He eats the pin in that title match.
You beat RVD and nothing changes.
I think a lot changes.
How so?
You take his Mystique away. He's lost now. He already blew his chance. He blew his first chance. But this is the guy that was looked at as the future, and he choked away his first. He should have been out of this match altogether. Shouldn't have even been in this match.
I know, because you and the kids of your generation, you all believed in RVD, you know?
We bought him, baby. We bought
RVD buttons, you know?
Look, I don't care. At this point, yes, wins and losses were traded, not as frequently as they are now. But this is a guy that came in with more heat than they had seen in a long time for a guy debuting, right? I mean, no one. Jericho, I guess, a little bit in 99, but they killed him quickly. RVD was a guy I thought that should have been kept strong right through. I thought he should have been out of the invasion angle at this point, doing his own, like you said, doing his own thing. I thought he should have left the alliance and just kind of, whatever, had a match with someone not involved in this. And then when this whole stupid angle ends, then you ramp him up as a major guy.
Why would undefeated. You want them to all of a sudden now go against the formula, which is nobody can be better than the WWF guy? I'm just giving you their rationale.
I don't care about their rationale.
Their rationale was is that RVD can be beaten and it's not going to change him. He's going to be just as over on Monday as he was on Sunday.
And I don't think he was.
That's their lie. But what's the real reason? The real reason is because they were never going to let an outside guy get over on one of theirs. They were never going to have somebody bigger than their homegrown talent. Never, ever, ever, ever. Ever.
Silly.
I agree.
I don't think RVD takes a hit till I agree with JR, not here, but later on.
I think RVD when Hunter wouldn't put him over for the belt.
Well, that's another. That.
No,
that's
but
another.
I thought
that's
already 03, by that point.
That's 03.
That's 02. 02. 02. Yeah, but at that point, they had to kind of rebuild him back up. Like, I felt here was the hottest. I felt like they had a ready-made guy coming off the invasion that could have been really fresh. And carry them and rejuvenate things.
Well, wait a minute now. When did they unite the titles with Jericho winning?
That was at the end of the Year of Vengeance.
We'll get to that.
Okay. Didn't all of this set the stage for that?
Yeah, I just think RVD would have been a better choice.
You're out of your mind.
He gave you the Vince laugh. Out of your mind.
Yeah, you're right. Having Jericho take care of Stephanie's dog and win like
no,
better.
That's after the fact.
It was much better.
That's again, we're not going to let anybody get over on one of ours. And if we do,
well, Jericho wasn't one of theirs.
Yeah, I know, but just remember, now they're going to build him up so they could feed him to Hunter. We're going to let him get over on Rock. See, Triple H doesn't miss a trick. We're going to let him get over on Rock and Steve in one night. So that when I come back, Vince, then I could beat him. And then when I beat him, then we'll have him shovel dog poop. Now, if you lay all that out in, you know, one scenario, just like I just did, you come across sounding like a crazy person. Mm-hmm. But that's what happened. That is what happened. And I guarantee you Triple H is smart enough to know, boy, if we could somehow get Jericho to beat Rock and Austin in one night, imagine how hot he will be, right? And then when I come back, that's the guy I knock off. Then once I'm in there, then watch me. I'll really put the boots to that guy. I hate that guy. I know, Scott. Sorry. It's your favorite.
I think you're giving him too much credit, to be quite honest with you. I don't think he had that much. I don't think he had that kind of clout yet.
Yes, he did. Anyway.
Scott lives in a bubble of delusion when it comes to his
good guy wins at WrestleMania. For God's sakes, Kevin.
Yeah, but it didn't have to be him.
He was the one coming back from injury. Well, this is a totally other podcast. We'll get to that when we get to the first half of it, too.
All right. I'm just saying.
Survivor Series, Kevin. Too soon to end the invasion, or was it time? And if it was time, was that only because of the way it was booked? Like, when this thing started, I thought it was going to go to Mania.
When this thing started, I thought it was going to be two separate companies under one roof. Mm. What a fool I was.
Yeah, right. Yes, R.
Shut it. It needed to end because it was so bad. It was so bad.
What was bad about it, though? I mean, besides the fact that the original intent to make them equal didn't work, but what was bad about the product about it? Because, I mean, they were still having good matches. Were you just tired of them only fighting the other company thing? I mean, like what was it about it that really...
Well, all right. From the fans' point of view, you got to see Lance Storm, Tajiri. Got a lot of good matches. You saw people you'd never seen before if you were just a WWF fan. And it was certainly exciting. Me, I looked at it from the business side, and I saw that was when I really, really, really started to hate working there. Because I saw the pettiness and just the how small everything was. How everything they just they threw business away because of ego and because of just proving a point, you know? And it's not my personality, so that's just it. Like when Scott Hudson came to Connecticut for his audition, I was one of the first guys that greeted him. I thought it was awesome. Are you kidding me? I love Scott Hudson. I wanted to see him be super successful. We need more good voices on this show. And, you know, went out there, did the one little match, and then that was really it. So it was a damn shame. Just took an opportunity to take everything that had been done with WCW badly, with Russo and Bischoff and Hogan and Ego and Guaranteed Money and everything, and just run it under the WWF umbrella. Under the control of Titan Sports, my belief was is that anything could be done right. And that was when I thought, finally, I realized how naive I have been. That Vince is just lucky. He's gotten lucky a couple of times. He got lucky with Hogan. He got lucky with Austin. And if it wasn't for him getting lucky, that asshole would have been out of business a long time ago, because he's dumb as a stump and his ego is so big. He won't let anybody ever get over on him at all. You know how, like, when you're playing a game against a kid, and you might let him win one just so he feels good? Vince is the guy that would win 7 out of 7 and then flip the board up in your face and then kick you. But I'm just a child, Vince. I don't care, pal. This is life. Nobody gets over on me. That's what I felt like. It wasn't enough to... they talked about like spiking the football in politics, you know. That's what this was.
Now, at that Survivor Series, there were certain guys you could tell that were going to be elevated and were the shine on that night. Edge unified the titles against Test. Then Test got it back later on in the night in the Battle Royal. Regal, Christian, Dudley's unified the tag belts. Was that the plan for those guys to be like the ones that were going to shine on that night?
Yeah, that was and again, you know, the one chapter was coming to an end, but we were starting to line up. Okay, these are our guys now. And these are the ones that we're going to go to war with going down the road. So it had it felt good to sort of get out of the dream matchup, and now we're moving on. We're settling some things, and we're moving on. Mm-hmm. And I agree with all the choices. You know, I don't think they picked any bad ones. No doubt about it. They certainly had a lot of good talent to choose from. Absolutely. And I agree with all the choices that they made.
It seemed like they're finally getting serious with the Regal at this point. Like, he had kind of been the commissioner thing and everything. Like, now it felt like they were actually lining him up to be a good wrestler.
And there was, you know, there was a time when I think it was probably 02, Regal and Jericho and Benoit waiting for whomever it was in a six-man. And I was like, golly, man, these three badasses, are you kidding me? This is awesome. I was really happy at that moment. That was later on.
Thoughts on Trish's elevation to the women's champion? Was she ready? Did you see the star in her at this point? And it seemed like they're throwing her into the deep end, just saying, all right, you're going to learn on TV as champion. Go out there and work with these veteran women and figure it out.
And that's the perfect description. Go out there and figure it out. Did a great job, though. And it was kind of, you know, a lot of hold your breath moments. You were hoping and praying that these matches were going to go well, and they really all seemed to. You know, flying without a net, but she did a great job. I was very proud of her. What a good kid. Never changed. Always had a good attitude. Very, very happy for her.
Was it smart for her then to be off camera that summer? Like, not off camera, but she wasn't on as much during the real meat and potatoes of the invasion. Really, she was. I know she had an injury, right? I think she was hurt, and you know, kind of set herself up for the run. You think that was smart to not really get her too involved in the invasion?
I'm trying to remember why she wasn't on television.
I'm pretty sure she got hurt, and then she trained
ankle, knee, something like that.
Breast implants?
No. Did she need them?
That's usually why girls take time off, you know.
I don't think she needed them.
No.
Well, she either already had them.
Well, they're not on natural, are they?
Well, I thought she already had them when she came in. I guess
all right, maybe she did. Yeah. I can't remember her being hurt, though. But, yeah, boy, she would have been lost in the shuffle, right?
She had an ankle injury in the summer and then sidelined for the following 3 months.
That sounds like new boobs to me.
As she rehabs, she kept herself visible by co-hosting Excess on TNN.
New boobs. Oh, yeah, her and Coach.
Mm.
That's right.
Excess.
The Bite This ripoff.
Yes.
Completely stolen.
Mm. That's right. She had the whole thing with Jeff going on, and then... And with Lita and yeah,
all right,
and
Kev,
then she just kind of vanished.
Did you like the setup of the main event for Survivor Series? And do you think it was kind of dumb that WCW and WWF came out to Austin Rock in the end?
Give me all the scenario again.
It was a 5-on-5 elimination match. They had Shane was on the heel team and sloppy ass Big Show they brought back for the face team out of nowhere. Angle did the fake heel turn weeks before, but he was a mole, and then he turns during the match. Jericho snaps and almost cost WWF the match, and then the final segment's Austin Rock, and Rock pins Austin to end the invasion. Like, do you think it was just dumb that we have Austin Rock as the end of the Monday Night War? And not like an WCW guy.
Yeah. Very much so. I remember the choosing of the teams, and it was like, who in the world picked these teams? They're just awful. And, Kurt is the mole, and, oy vey. But, probably no better way to end this than with the two guys that represented the war between WCW and the WWF. Stone Cold Steve Austin and The Rock.
On the Vince, like, boner meter, where does him coming out with his arms raised at the end of this pay-per-view to celebrate the end of the war rank, you think?
Bark Like a Dog, 1. Brett Screwed Brett, 2. It was me, Austin. It was me, Austin, all along, 3. Invasion, 4. Stephanie saying on 9/11 that Vince beat the federal government, 1A. Vince leering at Stephanie during pre-tapes, 1C.
All right.
Yikes.
So, and in other news, how about Dottie Sandusky coming out of the woodwork saying that Jerry didn't do anything wrong?
Oh, she needs to go away.
Oh, my God.
Lock her up with him.
Right. It was an odd segue I made there.
Those slumber parties in the basement were all fine.
They'll build a fucking statue to them.
Yeah, he never lied to me once. And those people were just out to get his money. To profit somehow from him.
Yeah.
Saying these horrible things.
All right. If you had to wrap up the invasion, your final memories, 3 questions. Who got screwed most? Whose potential was ultimately wasted? And who benefited the most?
Easy answers. Who got screwed the most? The fans. Fans were cheated out of just years of, maybe not years, but 2 separate companies. What was the second question?
Whose potential was wasted?
Whose potential was wasted? Pretty much everybody that came over. Everybody was put in a position to fail, and they all failed. In order to cross the bridge, you must answer the troll's question, and they all died. Every one of them died. Some of them found a way to kind of like roll dead away and kind of resuscitate themselves a little bit, but, you know, like Booker T or Hurricane or whatever, but, you know, nothing was expected of Hurricane. He was Sugar Shane Helms. He became the Hurricane. You know what I mean? And Booker T blown up, you know, on the bridge, let alone cross it. Somehow he was able to make it to the other side. Every step along the way was horrible. And who profited from this? Vince. Because of the WWE network that we see today, that everybody's downloading and watching on their device right now, was started because of capturing the WCW library, and that's where all of this is now. When I started taking inventory of all of those just stacked boxes, and I'm just looking at stacks and stacks and stacks of tape and artwork, and oh my God, this is everything. You not only bought WCW, you bought WCW. You have it all here. You have all of the footage. You have everything. So, yeah, Vince, hello.
So the next night on Raw, they reset the company. They have Vince go back heel. Austin's a face. They do the kiss my ass. Jericho and Angle are set up as the new heels. Jerry Lawler returns. Ric Flair debuts. All this. How much of it was due to ratings? Is that why they turned Vince back heel, Austin back face? Was it going to happen either way? What'd you think of the kiss my ass? And then we'll get to the other two in a second.
Who was the kiss my ass victim?
Regal was the first one.
Regal.
Oh, hated it. Hated it. Yeah, what do we do? Let's get back to doing what we do best. Let's get back to Vince being the bad guy and Austin being the good guy. And, you know, let's show how big my dick is and I'll make somebody kiss my ass. Regal, come here, you. It'll be funny. He'll make a face. Ha ha.
Were they returning a bit to like the Attitude style more with that? Was that part of the drive to get the ratings back up? Because they kind of got away from it with the invasion.
Well, I think part of it too is that there was a lot of wrestling. And they hate wrestling. So if we can do nonsense and not have wrestling, then that makes them happy. So, yeah, that show was, you know, that was one of those real hotshotty shows. November, sweeps month, we need a big rating. You know, Flair's going to come back. It'll do a big number. blah, 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 blah.
What was your memories of Flair and King that night? And did you like the co-owner angle they started?
No. I didn't like it, but because it wasn't believable to me. I don't know, JR, that's a better question for you. Was it believable to you?
Yeah, like because it was Flair.
I think so.
No, I liked Flair. I loved seeing Flair, but I didn't need to see Flair as a fake co-owner.
See, I liked that because I saw his ending days in WCW, and I really didn't know how much he had left to give in the ring. And I liked him. He's such a good talker, and I thought him and Vince had some really great interactions.
I agree.
I didn't mind it.
Yeah. Okay.
I thought Flair made it work. Like, you know, yeah, like,
he
I
played
don't know
it off because he looks like the kind of guy. Yeah, he's the kind of guy that could come off as a rich.
Yeah, you believed he had
guy.
The money to do it. Yeah, he was savvy. Like that was always his gimmick. You know, a savvy business guy, and it made sense that he would have done what he did. Like anyone else, it probably would have been like maybe Bischoff was like the only other guy that could have pulled that off with Bischoff,
which they wound up doing. Yeah, they did that down the road.
Right.
But I guess I was just too inside to like that.
Mm.
You know, I think, see, and I go back to talent development. Who's the next guy that needs the rub?
Mm-hmm.
Who's the next guy that needs the help, that needs the push? And you use the old guy to get the young guy over, and then the old guy goes away. WWF continues to bring the old guys back and not let the young guys get over. They're not the stars. Cena and Orton was on the poster and was at the center of the Royal Rumble, right?
Yep.
Correct?
Yep.
That was a horrible match. It was a good match that nobody cared about. And all anybody cared about was the new guys. They wanted to go crazy for Roman Reigns. They wanted to go crazy for CM Punk. Well, no, they wanted to go crazy for Daniel Bryan. And when CM Punk lost, that was it. I just think you could have brought Ric Flair back, and Ric Flair could have said, in my pocket, I have a name written down in an envelope and I'm just making this up. And this is going to be the guy. And I'm telling you, this is going to be the guy. And everybody wants to know who's the name in the envelope. And then they're all, you know, people are starting to line up. Am I going to be the guy, Rick? You'll find out very soon. And the person who Ric Flair thinks is going to be the guy is that guy right there, whoever it is. Now, all of a sudden, Ric Flair has given so-and-so the stamp of approval. And now you can have matches accordingly. And that's a terrible idea, one that I just made up. But what does it have to do with? It has to do with wrestling, and it has to do with advancing careers.
Mm-hmm.
Why didn't you pick me, Rick? Why did you pick him? I think he's better than you. Why don't you prove it to me? Go show us how good you are.
And I think they kind of did that with Angle going into Vengeance with the little title tournament. Angle was basically saying, you know, he was going to be the man that won it. And Flair was like, well, we'll see. Go prove yourself kind of thing. So, I mean, they kind of actually did that with him.
But it was all under the guise of
I know.
Under the guise of fake ownership. And Angle was already established.
Yeah, I know.
Angle was already established. Do it to be the guy who faces Angle. But I have a different view of the world. I'm stupid.
No debate there. Heyman to King. Instant downgrade again.
Oh, absolutely.
Brutal, right? Did they have to bring King
the only
back?
Person that was happy about that was Jim Ross.
Ugh. And he sucked right off the bat. Again. It was good for like... It was. Has there ever been... Scott, I talked about this, and this, may just talk about it for a minute. Has there ever been a cooler moment that was more damaging to a company? Like, it was great. Like, it was really cool when he came out and got the pop, and it was really exciting, and then you realize just how much it friggin' sucked.
Yeah.
Just watch Vengeance.
Ugh. Oh, yeah, he was terrible. Right,
threw it in
the
stinker. So bad. It's almost like Jerry stopped doing his homework. I mean, this past week on Raw, he made like 5 mistakes.
Well, he hasn't done homework in like years.
Yeah, but I mean, it even started here. So bad. Talk about crutches. Talk about boobs. Puppies.
Okay. Puppies.
And then there's a main event. And you kiss Vince's ass for 20 minutes. Pretty much Jerry's modus for the next like 3 years.
You just figure this out?
No, just making a point. I knew that already.
It's always been the point.
Yeah. Yep.
When Lawler had the heart attack, right?
Mm-hmm.
I said, because I thought he was dead. I think I said to my wife, I wonder how many phonies are going to go to his funeral and pretend that they liked him and be sad for the fact that he's gone. When the majority of people, if he passed away, would be like, oh, okay. That's it. If they were true, if they were honest. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I just think he lacks sincerity in every facet of his game.
Jerry?
Yeah.
Hmm.
I think
I just talked about his crappy announcing. I didn't think of it. It wasn't thinking that deep.
But it's one and the same. The effort that he puts in on the air is the same effort that I've seen him put in with interpersonal relationships. He's a crummy father, right?
Hmm.
And been a lousy husband.
All
not a big Lawler fan, if you hadn't guessed.
Yes.
You know? And I don't wish ill on the guy. I was like, oh my gosh, he's having a heart attack. And my first thought was, I wonder how many phonies are going to show up at his funeral and pretend to be sad. So, I'm not the only person that thinks it either. Like JR, he thinks it. So we talked about off the air.
Mm-hmm.
When's Lawler going to drop dead again? That was good for ratings.
Get Kevin Kelly in the tanning bed.
Why are you on me about that?
You're so white. All right, Kevin,
I am.
All right, Scott, what's next? What's next?
All right. So Vengeance was coming around, final pay-per-view of the year, and I got, I'm walking into this, but fuck it. Got very excited seeing the poster that came out.
Mm.
And it was the game himself and his sledgehammer. Was he supposed to be back at that point? Because
those posters are done probably 2 months in advance. And he wound up returning, 6 weeks later?
January 7th.
Yeah.
So, because the Vengeance pay-per-view was December,
9th.
12th?
9th.
Oh, it was an early one.
Yeah.
So it was a month away. Listen, it takes a while to get the fringe right on the denim jacket.
Hell yeah.
You know? It might not have been ready December 9th, but it was sure as hell ready on January whatever.
7th.
7th. At the Garden.
Shine the leather sleeves.
Cover that one next time.
Kev,
do you think it was time to try? Yep, go
ahead. And to further the point, could he have come back to do whatever he was going to do? Would it have been better, or was this really sacrificing pay-per-view for television ratings?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
I don't know where he would have fit on that card anyway.
Yeah, I don't know where he would have either.
With the whole title tournament thing, and it was kind of a weird show. I think they were better off waiting until the new year and starting fresh. Mm.
I agree.
Right. And that was one where Creative Services had the idea of where it was going to go. This is going to be where Hunter returns. And then they wind up doing the title tournament because booking doesn't talk with Creative Services because booking TV is written week to week. So there you go. Hey, Vince, we've got Triple H on the poster. Oh, fuck it. Oh, well.
Only one man has that poster in his room. Was it time to try...
Scott Driscoll!
Was it time to try Jeff versus Matt, or was it too soon after Edge and Christian? And why did it bomb so quickly?
Why did it bomb so quickly? Because it never should have happened. Right?
Mm.
Agree?
Well, I thought it was too, we just did it with Edge and Christian. Now we're doing it with them, these two teams that have been linked. And I thought they should have done it. If they were going to split them, it should have been amicable. They should have just split and went their own way. I don't think we needed a feud or fight between them.
Fake feud, fake fight.
Right.
And that was exactly. Remember when Cedric and Caprice split in Ring of Honor?
Right. Yep.
And the talk was, oh, you know, they're going to feud with each other. No, they're not. Why? Who wants to see them fight each other? Mm. Well, you got a point there. And then look at Edge fight Christian. Matt and Jeff. PU. Bubba fights Devon. Nobody wants to see that.
Oh, thank God that never happened.
Well, a little bit.
For the most part.
It did a little bit. For the most part. But you know what I mean? But when a team is linked together, you don't want to see them fight one another. You know, Sean and Marty was done that way for a purpose, for a reason. Mm-hmm. And then you didn't see Marty anymore. He went away.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. He might as well have, instead of being thrown through the barbershop window, he might as well have been thrown through the airplane window.
Now, that would have been an angle.
Woohoo!
Rock
I'm in Malaysia. Sean, I'm in Malaysia. Wait a minute. The plane's taking off. All right, I'll call you when I land. Beep. Beep.
All right.
That's the way you do it. One guy turns on the other guy, and then they go away. Goodbye. What happened to the other guy? He's gone, and you'll never see him again because I kicked his ass. I embarrassed him. I ran him out of the territory. Oh, we don't have territories anymore because we only have one company. Because I own it all.
Give me your DVDs.
Look at me. I'm on a tablet.
Another big kind of reboot was Taker. His matches for most of the invasion were ranged from average to unwatchable. Then he turns heel. And what'd you think of it? Did it have to happen? Was it good for him? It seemed to have rejuvenated him big time. Do you think it needed to happen?
Who did he feud with?
Well, he had the one match here with RVD, and then he gets into some stuff in 02. But he cut his hair, and he did the thing where they shoved JR's face in Vince's ass. He said, you know, what's wrong with kissing Vince's ass kind of thing.
Rejuvenated. Did it rejuvenate him? Did he have better matches or did he just have better opponents?
I thought he had better matches.
It's a combination of both.
I mean, he looked to get in better shape around this time, too.
He didn't have to deal with chronic anymore, anyway.
Everything with Taker is health. When he's healthy and he can train and he can get and his body can rest and he's not in agony all the time, then he's okay. Mm. You know? But if because he's had hip issues for so long and nerve damage and all these different things, that when that acts up and everything goes to shit, you know, it's very difficult to manage. Mm.
And he kind of started doing like the cool, kind of weird, crazy old man thing. And like he had this like funny facials, like drunken selling and acting more like a dick in the ring. I thought it rejuvenated him, but kind of let him be like an asshole.
Yeah.
Man.
I like the match going back to the invasion when he whipped Raven's ass, remember?
Mm-hmm.
I think it was on SmackDown. Raven, bloody mess. I loved that. I thought that was going somewhere, but it didn't. Well, I guess it did, but not really.
And then here at this show, he beat RVD for the hardcore title.
Yeah, because he's hardcore.
That was a fun match, though.
Yeah.
Did you agree with unifying the titles here, or should they have waited till Mania? Was Jericho the right choice, and was it handled right? Which I guess we already kind of answered that last one, but...
Was he the right choice? Yes. It was to elevate somebody. Elevate the right guy at the right time. You're never going to be 100%. And there's never going to be unanimous, you know, it's not 100% across the board. This is the guy. Where do we mostly agree on? Okay. We mostly agree on Jericho. He gets the majority of the vote. So he's the right guy. Was it handled the right way after the fact? No. But nobody could ever take away the fact that Chris Jericho on one night beat both The Rock and Stone Cold Steve Austin to become the unified champion. That's a soundbite, as Jim Ross would say.
All right, Kev, one last question, as we always ask you. Where was your mental state as 01 heads into 02? Just feeling for the company and for yourself.
Every day I would wake up and I would think I was going to get fired. And I was 34 years old with a college degree and had never really done anything too much outside of professional wrestling. And I was scared shitless every single day. So, yeah. How about that? Dream job. Woo.
So you were obviously still miffed.
Go ahead,
about,
I'm sorry.
You were obviously still miffed about Cole on SmackDown. Did you and him get along?
Yeah, we did.
At this point.
I liked him. I didn't have a problem with him. He didn't like me. Because when Heyman started producing SmackDown, I sat in on the VO sessions. And they would go on like all night long. I just wanted to learn from Heyman. And apparently, you know, so I was told at some point, hey, they don't want you there anymore. Really? How come? And I was talking to the producer. And he was like, well, you know. And I said, Cole? Yeah. No kidding. I was like, that MF-er. Oh, well. Whatever. I would just sit there quietly in the corner and never say boo to anybody and just listen. Right. You know, then I would ask Paul questions. So, that's I. Wrestling Observer, best announcer, I consistently finish above Michael Cole. So, there you go.
All right, with that, we will wrap up. Kevin, we want to thank you for taking some time tonight here, going through the rest of 01. And we got, what, a year and a half left with you here, and then we'll have to figure something out. All right, everyone, listen, you can check out the Kevin Kelly Show each and every other Wednesday here at PlaceNation.com. Scott, we'll be back Monday night with our fourth annual March Madness preview show.
Yep.
And then Wednesday night, I had misspoken our last show. So Wednesday night will be the Kevin Kelly Show, Episode 5, and the main event, Episode 5 as well.
That's right.
The week after that will be Episode 300, followed by Rumble 02. So for Kevin and Scott, I am Justin. Everyone, we'll talk to you Monday. Inside the Madness.
Woo!
Casper the Ghost over here.
Shut up! That's three times!
You were eating tag-alongs before, weren't you? Or were they do-si-dos?
They were definitely Ghost cookies.
What a jerk! It's the Rascal Kid.